For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way towards salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as in a cave. We invite you now to join us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle, Timothy O'Donnell, and Joseph Tomasian. Join us in the Catholic Cave.
Welcome to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell, Joseph Tomasian, and we are talking today about obedience. We're talking about marriage. We're talking about vocations, but mostly we're talking about obedience. Obedience is one of those things that it's almost become a hot cultural topic right now. You've got a large number of social media influencers that are talking about self-discipline. They're talking about the need to submit yourself to some sort of regimen, to some sort of rigmarole. And so there's this, I think, cultural push, I mean, at least among some people, to heighten the idea of being obedient to some authority. And yet you still have the idea of wives submitting to your husbands.
Yeah, I don't know that I can agree with you right out of the gate here, Mark.
The
idea that there's this push for self-discipline that is subjected to this higher authority
I don't think it's a higher
or this
authority,
discipline, right? They're disciplining themselves to some particular virtue, where I see it almost opposite of, well, not opposite, but counter that, and it's a self-discipline to the self, to be true to oneself, to be autonomous, to push away from the institutionalism.
To be the best version of yourself you can be. I mean, yeah, I think it's rooted
but there's
in
no
that.
Standard.
Tim Robbins.
Yeah, I don't know that I could say that it's self-discipline. Then I think it's self-aggrandizement.
Oh my! let's back up a minute because you brought up the word obedience, Mark. What? Maybe define that. We love to define terms here on the Catholic Cave.
I like defining.
Well, I am not the Latin scholar here, but my understanding is, you know, the roots of it are really to be able to listen to somebody, right? So
ob audire, to listen to hear.
Right. So obedience is rooted in a relationship of, you know, my understanding is that it comes more from a scholastic understanding of you are obedient to a teacher. In other words, you're learning from somebody else. So you are submitting yourself to their instruction.
That's more what it means to be docile, right? To be teachable. Obedience itself is almost a virtue of wisdom. It's to be able to hear the truth. It's to be able to recognize
it.
Well, not necessarily
conform oneself to it.
Well, I would say yes, to conform oneself to the realities of truth.
Yeah,
yes,
one is heard.
Yeah.
Okay, that might be a good working
right. Okay, so then
definition.
Okay, so let's just jump into the controversy then, right?
Yeah.
Marriage requires obedience, right? It requires obedience.
Yeah, she just won't listen to me.
right. Yeah.
maybe if you would speak wisdom.
Right.
Well, that is a problem.
Yeah. So I think the question then is, okay, does obedience, as you were kind of saying, well, you know, I don't think this discipline that we're seeing among influencers pushing for this self-disciplined type of life is rooted in obedience, because it's essentially selfish, right?
Yes.
Does obedience require a loss of self-identity? Does it really require you to kind of forget yourself? Is there a forgetfulness of who you are as a person to be obedient?
So let's start with the classical understanding of these, what it means to be docile, what it means to have self-discipline, what it means to be obedient. And it all stems from the fundamental value of knowing who you are, know thyself, right? The great virtue inscribed above the Delphic oracles building there. So know yourself. And then we can look at Aristotle, who says that the unexamined life is not worth living. So in order to be obedient, in order to be teachable, it starts with this capacity to know who you are at your core in regards to reality, right? And we call that truth, right? So know truth, know who you are, and know what you lack. And so in doing so, you can be obedient to the wisdom of the world, to the wisdom of the ancient authors, to have the to hear the wisdom of sacred scripture, the church fathers, et cetera, et cetera. But in order to do so, you have to have the willing readiness to embrace that which you don't already know, and to be wise enough to recognize the truth when you hear it. And that's what obedience is.
Okay, so
it's not a passive submission,
right? So this movement for self betterment, this movement for finding self discipline. I mean, I find it almost Nietzschean in some ways.
It is,
but
yeah.
But this idea to
I find it Gnostic.
yeah, agreed. Right, very much so. Right. Yeah.
But you know, it seems rooted in that same idea of knowing yourself, of learning who you are so that you can better yourself. But it is not going to submit to any other authority, right?
But it starts at an arbitrary starting point, right? So I want to be X, so X is my starting point. Well, you have to start with what and who you are. So there's this hylomorphic reality that I am, a biological male. I am come from this particular family, from this particular socioeconomic class, and that's your real
and
starting
language.
Point.
Right.
And language,
right.
Culture,
language is a big part of it. Yeah.
Education.
But you used you broke one of the cardinal rules of the Catholic cave. You used a big word that is not used in ordinary speech. So
and
let's
we need
go.
To spell
yeah,
it too.
Let's step
family?
Back. No, you used the word hylomorphic. So.
Oh, everybody knows what hylomorphism is.
Well, the funny thing with that is, you know, my instant thing was like, okay, so which version of hylomorphism are you talking about?
Let's start with Platonic. We can develop into Augustinian if we want.
Yeah,
and,
right.
So hylomorphism basically is the idea that, you know, there are two components to reality. There is the material component, and then there's the formal component, and they go together. You can't separate the two, right?
Yeah.
You've got material objects, and those objects are informed by something that gives them their boundaries, gives them their shape, gives them their identity as to what that matter is. And any given thing, you can't separate the two.
Yeah.
So that's
so
really so.
Hulo, spirit, morphe, stuff, and we would say substance and accidents, I guess, from an Aristotelian Thomistic perspective.
Right.
So body and soul.
Exactly. For the purpose of this conversation, you know, it's basically that we are both our bodies and our souls together.
They are inseparable.
They are inseparable. Right. You can't. We're not just souls inside a meat suit. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gosh, there was a preacher that was talking, you know, when I leave my meat suit, and it just drove me nuts. You know, it's like we don't have a meat suit.
Well, yeah. Now that makes sense because most of Protestantism follows the Platonic Augustinian route where there is this push against the carnal reality of the world, you know. So my flesh is inherently sinful, and so let's slough the sin, but my soul, my spirit is saved, and so the soul is good, the flesh is bad because it's weak, and so it makes sense from, you know, a 21st century perspective. I get how they got there. It's just wrong.
Right, and I think you were exactly right. You know, when you're saying, you know, we've got this embodied reality that puts limits on us, right?
Yeah.
You know, our bodies limit us, our culture limits us, our language limits us.
The
all
man
of these
limits
things,
us, right. The government limits us.
Well, but so, yeah.
Well, that one.
Right, yeah, but the
you
idea...
You gotta make that gesture with your thumb down.
But the idea that we can somehow start from an arbitrary starting point and create ourselves, you know, pull ourselves up by the bootstraps,
right,
and turn ourselves into something of our own design and our own making is a bit of a fantasy.
It is, and that's how voluntarism and relativism started, was this arbitrary starting point. Well, God can do whatever he wants, so he arbitrarily puts these boundaries and rules and defines who he is based upon his own will, his voluntas, right?
I think it's one of the really rotten fruit of atheism whether it's intentional atheism or practical atheism, is that one makes, because once you eclipse God, you take God out of the equation, then you're left with the project of this self-actualization.
Yeah, I guess. But you know what? There's an awful lot, and I would even say good Catholics and good Christians, that are pushing this idea of self-actualization. They're pushing this idea of becoming the best version of yourself.
Well, that's a Matthew Kelly phrase, so I don't disagree with that. That's what's going on.
It's the self-help section of Barnes & Noble.
Right. But it's what you're aiming at. Right. Yeah, that's the difference.
I was going to say, I also don't think it's divorced from the catechism, guys. I mean, I think it's there within Christian teaching. So I don't think it's just an atheist thing. I don't think it's just rotten fruits of atheism.
Well, okay, let's come back to that. Let's tell the listeners where the actual, there are absolute starting points that are not arbitrary from where we can begin with who we are. It doesn't have to be this arbitrary, this self-defined starting point.
Like, that's the bad fruit I'm talking about.
That's the bad fruit. Right. Yeah. And how many times have you heard your wives or even come out of your own mouths to your children just do the best that you can instead of pray that God reveal your vocation to you. It's even in our own lives today, and I know Maria, my wife, and I, we constantly tell our children, pray for your vocation. We pray for your vocation every night. We pray for their future vocation, whether it's for them to be married or otherwise, to be nuns or sisters. But it's asking God to reveal who I am so that I can fully understand and live a happy life.
Correct.
Instead of this, you are the arbiter of your future.
Right.
And so we do that as Catholic Christians all the time with our own children, with our wife. Hey, honey.
Or we should be.
If you want to, leave your work and go do something else, I fully encourage you. And that's great. I love it. Encourage your spouse. Stand by your wives. When do we get rid of the arbitrary and start implementing God back into it?
And I think that brings us back to this idea of obedience.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So, obedience, when people, I think, choke on that word, I really do think it's choking on it because they don't want to see obedience within the context of a vocational setting.
They
right?
don't know what obedience means.
And, I know. I think it's they don't know what vocation means. Yeah, you're right. That leads to them not knowing
benefits.
What obedience, but they don't know what vocation means. And this quest for vocation, sort of outside of the vocational structure. In other words, let's face it. As vocations, you got three choices, right? You got marriage, religious life, and you got marriage. You've got religious life and you got the priesthood, right? Those are your three states of life.
The single state is not a vocation.
The single state is not a vocation, and nor is self-actualization a vocation.
Well, with that, we're about up on a break. So you're listening to The Catholic Cave. We're talking about obedience. Stay tuned because we'll be right back.
With all the things going on in the world right now, it's nice to have hope.
When I'm having a really tough day, it really helps me get through.
It's just like their program was just meant for you.
Catholic Radio Indy.
It's the only radio station I listen to.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Welcome back to The Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell, Joseph Tomasian, and we are talking today about obedience. We're talking about marriage. We're talking about vocations. But mostly we're talking about obedience. And the reason why is because obedience in our current secular culture is a bit of a bad word. Nobody wants to obey, right?
I try to get people to obey me all the time, Mark. They refuse.
Exactly. Well, I mean, even in the context of business, right? You hear business professionals, managers talking about, okay, it's harder and harder and harder to, when you sit down for a job interview, kind of get to the point of that job interview of how well are you going to fit within the organizational structure? How well are you going to, let's face it, obey what this company, nobody sees that as a virtue. Nobody wants to present that as a virtue and nobody wants to do it.
As a business owner and a father, one of the things that I see that are really driving this next generation is a desire to demonstrate competence. And anything less than exceptional competence in whatever it is seen as this grave weakness. I got to tell you, it is so refreshing to hear one of my employees say, I don't know how to do that. Or can you show me how to do that? Because it demonstrates both the docility of somebody who can be developed into, you know, an outstanding employee or... with my children, Daddy, I don't know how to do that. And I love to be able to transfer that knowledge to them and show them how.
Yeah, I'm going to date myself a little bit here. But, you know, I remember when I was like probably still in college, I was talking with an uncle. You know, you've always got those uncles that want to give you great advice and all mm-hmm. of that. Chemicals, right? Sure. what he was saying is, you know, just get your foot in a door of a company because they will train you, right? Mm. You will learn what you need to learn from the company. Yeah, you're learning a set of skills and things from college, but really the skills that you're going to use in your job are going to come from being trained by mm-hmm. those people whom you work for. That's kind of gone by the wayside now. I mean, both on the employer and employee side. The employers don't want to spend a lot of effort training you to do something. They want to hire somebody ready out of the box that's able to do those things. Yeah. But on the flip side, you know, the employees aren't exactly docile and willing to be trained either.
You know, I have this brain spark. Belonging to Gen X, we like to say that the generations above us didn't teach us anything because we're latchkey children, whatever. We had to learn everything on our own the hard way by drinking out of the hose and riding
Amen,
our bikes
brother.
Until
I tell
10
you,
p.m.
Yep.
and so we naturally look to the generations under us and say, why don't you know how to do the thing? Because we taught ourselves the thing. And so we have this implicit bias where others should have done the same disordered things that we did in order to gain
exactly.
life experience.
You know, it drives me nuts when I come across somebody younger than me that they're not able to surgically remove a lawn dart from somebody's eye. I mean, this was... This was a necessary skill when we were growing up.
I don't even think you can get them on eBay anymore.
And all their blunted tips. I wanted right. to get one, but I saw they were blunted. No thanks.
They're like Nerf. Man.
I know, yeah.
That's for wusses.
Well, and so with that, we have this, we instill the anxiety into other people where they have to present themselves as extremely competent. And then we complain when they're 23 years old, presenting themselves as competent and don't have, you know, the secondary or tertiary level pay when they come into a corporate job.
Well, so obviously this affects the job world, right? The
sure.
the job market. But how does it affect vocations, right? We talk in the church about vocations crisis. We talk about, you mm-hmm. know, a lack of people discerning vocations to the priesthood. Obviously, religious life in this country is, you know, actually, I've seen some things that it may be reversing itself. But, you know, it compared to where religious houses were mm-hmm. A couple generations ago, you know, we have so many fewer brothers, sisters, nuns, monks. How does that idea of, okay, I've got to display my own competence. I've got to build my own resume. I've got to do this all in myself. And so therefore obedience isn't the virtue. It's sort of self-actualization. That's the virtue. How does that affect vocations?
Well, first of all, families of our generation were having far fewer children than the generations preceding us. And so, you know, like with my mother's generation, she's one of five, and her parents are, her dad was one of 12. You know, my in-laws, they're both one of 12 or 13 or something ridiculous. And so you have this plethora of children. And so perhaps it's a numbers game. Maybe there were more vocations then because there were simply more young people being educated by the Catholic Church. Maybe there's just less now.
Yeah, you know, teaching medieval history, it's sort of one of the, I don't necessarily know that it's totally true, but it's one of those cliches about medieval life that, you know, your firstborn child was the child that would go into, they would inherit the kingdom, they would be the knight, they would be the lord, and then your secondborn would be like kind of a backup, so they'd be like the vice president to the president, and then that third child you would give to the church, right? Yeah. So that third child would be a priest, right, a nun, etc. Yeah, I don't think that it was as much a pattern as people want to make it out to be.
The United States was founded on second sons,
right? But I think there's a I think there is probably a little bit of a human nature component to that. That your first child, you do kind of want to carry on your legacy. You want to raise them the way you were raised, which for most of us, if you're having children, that means within the context of a married family. If you're going to have a child that you're, I don't know, I don't know how much parents plant seeds for vocations, but if they're going to find a religious vocation, it's going to be a younger child. So if you only have one child, you're not going to have any religious vocations.
Right. I think one of the contributing factors to that, right, we all kind of know the one of the pivotal moments in American history, Western civilization, the 60s, there's a cultural revolution, right? There's a whole shift in how we think about ourselves, who we are, how we actualize ourselves, how we find. And I think the thing I'll put my finger on as one factor is happiness. I think there's a big change in what people think are happy, what happiness is comprised of. And if happiness, or let's say joy, comes from a life of, say, obedience to God's will as you understand it, that might put you on a certain kind of trajectory, which is very different from, and what I get from a lot of my students, is happiness is getting to do what you want to do and then surrounded by positivity.
Right.
That's a huge buzzword these days.
Yeah.
If you're not positive or surrounded by positive, then that's a problem.
Right. And how do you, and the problem is, how do you learn from positive people, right? I mean, well, I guess you need a certain sunny disposition from a teacher. But
it's a kind of absence of being challenged.
You're right, exactly. you're literally surrounding yourself with yes men, right? I mean,
and women.
And surrounded by yes men, you're never truly happy. But you say happy and joy, and you use it concomitantly as if it's the same thing. Happiness, to be happy is an emotion. It's a positive emotion, right? But joy is a stability of self, right? It's a long-term.
I agree they're different.
I think we're talking joy here.
You can be joyful. Yeah. Right. It's a stability of self. And in that joy, you can have happy moments and you can have sad moments.
Right.
You can be angry, you can be anxious, but joy is an enduring thing, and
sort of the opposite of that. If I mean, you can be euphorically happy and not be joyful. I mean, it can be the happiness of the moment.
That's
why
heroin is so prodigious in our culture.
Right, exactly. But I want to go back to the obedience side of all of that, because that's what we're talking about. At least that's what we set off to talk about.
Yeah.
We're talking about everything.
But the necessity of obedience to have a joyful life, to a certain extent, means the necessity of vocation, right? Because you can't obey yourself,
yes,
right? You can only be obedient within community of some variety. So to somehow have happiness outside of a vocational context is a fool's errand. It's a chaotic pursuit.
Well, it's a foolish pursuit because without stability, the happiness you seek is ephemeral. It's here today, gone tomorrow. Stability in your life, that is in your vocation. So your big V for me as married, my small V, that is what I do that earns a paycheck. Those two points of stability bring joy into my existence. And in that joy, I'm going to have moments of happiness and sadness. But I cannot have that stability of presence without obedience, without being obedient to my family, without being obedient to God, without being obedient to the social contract of the laws of my land, without being obedient to my culture, without being obedient to my language. I can't use words inappropriately and hope that other people, that I can convey my thought. And that's the danger of where we are today, because there's no obedience to the language, to the culture, to the family, to the social contract of the laws of the land or the church.
Well, one thing I'm going to bring up, I know we're going to come up on a break here shortly. Mark, it's an homage to you, because I'm going to bring up one of the unholy three, Immanuel Kant.
All right.
Okay. So I'm going to bring this up quickly, and we'll maybe pick it up again on the other side of the break. Here's one thing I think that is, I'm not saying Kant got it right, but one thing I think is completely vanished from our current setting is the moral life for Kant, in large part, is found in what? Doing one's duty. Like, I don't think we, and that doing one's duty, I think, is related to obedience.
That's a Greco-Roman virtue.
Right. And so we don't have, I don't think in the current setting, there's many people out there that are thinking of their lives as having duties that they have a responsibility, and have been fulfilling those responsibilities is directly connected to happiness.
Yeah, but you know what?
And the moral life.
Right.
That's totally gone.
But I'll tell you what, you go down that road, you go down, as you put it, it's a Roman Greco virtue, right? This was a, and it's a Confucian virtue.
Yeah. There's ancient wisdom.
There's ancient wisdom, but I also think, you know, and this is what Christianity gets accused of, and I want to push back against it. Obedience is not slavish, right? You know, Nietzsche called Christian morality slavish morality because of the obedience that's built into it. But I want to say, you know, look, no, we're not talking about obedience as a duty, right? Dutifulness of obedience is not where Christian obedience is rooted. So we're going to come up on a break, but let's talk about the difference between Christian obedience and the duty to obey.
Anytime you get in the car, turn on the radio, you know that there's going to be something encouraging.
It's such an encouragement and enriching to my own Christian walk.
It brings me a great deal of peace.
I really am blessed whenever I listen.
Catholic Radio Indy.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a voice for the church that's seldom heard in our chaotic world. We're confirmation for the strong of faith and encouragement and answers for those in doubt. We're there to rejoice with your triumphs and to be a voice of consolation through the dark times. We're a voice for vocations and proudly pro-life. We are Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
At Catholic Radio, we love to hear from you. Call us anytime. Just recently, we found this message on our voicemail.
I'm a non-Catholic that listens to your Catholic radio station, and I just wanted to thank you guys. I listen to Catholic Answers and Al Cresta sometimes, and I think her name's Teresa Tommy. I listen to her and another show or two. I appreciate it.
Call us at 317-870-8400 and let us know what you're thinking.
I just called to say, even though I'm not a Catholic, I listen to your station.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Timothy O'Donnell in studio with Mark Tuttle, Joseph Tomasian. We were right before the break. Mark, you were energized, buddy. I love it. Let's talk more about obedience and duty and what the relationship might be between the two.
Right. Well, you know, the thing that jumped out at me is duty to somebody else is very much a pagan virtue. It is very, I would say, very non-Christian. Not that we don't have duties as Christians.
What would you make of the fourth commandment then? I'm going to disagree with you.
Well, let's talk about the fourth commandment. Once again, the fourth commandment was given to adults. It was not given to children. So it is not simply obey your parents. It is honor your parents. And with that,
Don't you have a duty to do it?
Of course you do, but that duty is not out of a slavish obligation to authority, especially among adults.
Oh, I agree, it's not slavish.
Right, and nor is it the duty that is owed to somebody that is in authority as you do what I say. That is not the duty that we owe to our parents as adults. Obviously as a kid, there's a certain amount of you need to listen to your parents and obey what they say. But as adults, very often that duty to your parents turns the tables. It's trying to convince your parents to do things that are in their best interest when they don't realize it and they don't know it. That duty isn't slavish obedience to authority. And I think that's where the obedience that we're talking about, that vocational obedience, when you take a vow of obedience, whether it's a vow of obedience to your spouse, or whether it's a vow of obedience to your bishop, or whether it's a vow of obedience to your religious superior, it's a different type of obedience than the duty that you have to do at work because you've been hired by somebody and they are literally an authority over you.
What's the relationship, do you think, between, or is there one, or what role do you guys think trust plays in obedience, being obedient?
Yeah, that's a good question. Trust, I think, ultimately has to stem from memory, from experience of previous actions, from recognizing competence. And as a child, that's innate. You see that your parents are going to keep you safe. They're going to feed you. They're going to put you to bed. You don't have to worry about, waking up in the middle. If done right, you don't have to worry about waking up in the middle of the night to, dangers perceived or otherwise. Trust, I think, has a tangential role in obedience. I think oftentimes, especially as we get older, we have to trust that others who are in positions of authority are going to do what is best for me. If I'm going into surgery, I trust that the surgeon is going to know what they're doing. If I go to confession, I have to trust that the priest is going to keep the seal of confession. And so I think trust is tangential to obedience, but I think it's like the chicken or egg, am I obedient right. first, or do I trust first, or does trust build obedience, and does obedience, the answer is yes.
Yeah. I think you can't have obedience without some measure of trust, unless it's slavish or compelled.
Sure. Right.
There's a kind of a what about this, though? What would you guys... I
do want to jump back then. So when we're talking about duty and you're looking at something like Confucianism, or you're looking at, your duty to the emperor in Roman society, where's the trust? Is there trust built into those kinds of duties?
I think it's a bit more slavish.
Especially
when you have guys like Nero. Or Caligula.
Yeah.
Well, there you have really bad like tyrants and things like that.
Yeah.
I think some of it is built into the fabric of society. Like I was thinking of maybe citizenship. Like I think citizenship brings with it certain duties or obligations. Maybe I'm not sure duties and obligations. I think about those are not exactly the same. I was going to bring up in the contemporary setting. It's been around for quite a while. But Holy Mother Church gives us both precepts that we're supposed to obey, and then we also have holy days of obligation.
Mm-hmm.
So again, obligation and obedience seem related in my mind.
Well, obligation means to follow the law, right?
Yeah.
Legere.
So Holy Mother Church has laws, canon law, right?
To obligation, and follow the law,
to be obedience, and following them,
listen, and docility, the capacity of oneself to be taught, right? To be teachable. And so,
obedience also has kind of like, I think of obedience as like carrying it out. So I see like docility and obedience, again, docility maybe almost like a precursor.
Two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But this is
kind of like duties and rights.
But going back to our original context of this, this is where obedience sort of does get a bad name within societies, because when you start talking about, well, obedience is obeying the law, and then you're talking about obedience in the context of marriage, you're not talking about wives obeying the laws of their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least I hope not.
Well, yeah.
Well, I would say though, maybe where there's a connection, Mark, I the way you just said it, I agree with, right? Husbands are not like lawmakers. But if I think of what the way I would define law, as I understand Aquinas, for example, is it's an ordinance of reason, right? So if a law, so the husband as the head of the household has a leadership role, and therefore will have to provide at times direction, right? Yeah. This is what we're making decisions and giving directions, and those should comport with reason. And if that to me begins to look a little bit like law. It's obviously not law. It's not legislative. You don't have divine command theory at work per se directly. But I do think there's a connection.
Yeah, and you don't only think that they should comport with reason. Every single wife thinks that those things ought to comport with reason, and they will point it out very quickly if it does not comport with reason.
Right. Oh boy, yeah.
I think
which is good, because hey, you can make
to
a mistake.
The signs of the time where we're not talking about social obligations. We're not talking about raising the next generation of citizens. We're talking about
not many people are anymore, right. Which is a shame.
It is,
because I think that's very destructive.
And so when we remove the obligation of the parents to raise the next class of social citizenry. Matter of fact, if we had parents, they would have no idea where to begin. You know, what does it mean to belong to the culture?
I can give an answer that I just got from my students a week ago, because I asked them that question. And the answer that was predominant about that, I had asked the question, what would you think about if the purpose of is the purpose of government to form good citizens? Mm-hmm. Right. That's a good question, I thought. Not my question.
Right.
And the answer overwhelmingly, because I have 32 students right now, overwhelmingly the answer is that would be great if they did it. And here's what it would look like. It would look like you would have what? The elimination of hate speech and positivity.
Oh,
those are the two main features.
Right.
So that's the kind of do good, avoid evil,
exactly,
in the most secularized way.
But also, the government should be there to be your friend, right? You know, the government should be there to provide the things that your friends do, positivity, and so you can actualize yourself as an individual.
This
and then
utopia
you've got
Mark, you're killing me.
I'm going to need to raise your taxes to make that happen for me.
The government should be your best buddy.
Right. The Pajama Boy. Yeah. That made me think of Pajama Boy. You remember him in his plaid onesie? That was horrible. Sort of, feeding off.
Well, trying to sell the idea of nationalized health care.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
Well, that's a whole nother conversation. But we're not talking about raising the next class of social citizens. We're not talking about the virtues of obedience and how that leads to stability in life. We're not talking about docility, because all these words are frowned upon.
Right.
You know? It's because you have to submit yourself to an authority outside of yourself.
Now, why do you... I guess getting back to sort of the original conversation, why do you have to submit to the authority of somebody outside yourself? Why can't you?
Because we're idiots, Mark. Because left to my own devices, I'm going to destroy myself.
Oh, that's true. I think that's true. I think that's true for me. One of the primary factors that is true, the evidence, is original sin.
Yeah.
Because we have weak wills, darkened intellect, and concupiscence.
Right. And
if you don't recognize that you have a capacity for grave damage, you are not living your life fully. If you don't recognize that you are dangerous to everybody around you, most especially yourself, you're not thinking hard enough. If you don't recognize that you have a capacity towards that violence, you have not read enough history.
Yeah. And I guess that gets into the There's almost an either or component to what we're talking about here. So we've got destructive human beings, right?
Yes.
That seems like the that
I am
seems
a destructive
like
human being, but the difference is I can hold it back, and that's what that's makes me good.
That's Solzhenitsyn.
Right.
You're channeling
right.
Solzhenitsyn.
That's what makes me good.
Right.
Yes.
So
yes. Gulag Archipelago.
But yeah. Now you've got three sort of to contain that damaging human being. You got three options. You can either expect people to self-actualize and control themselves.
No. You have to teach them.
Possibly teach them. Or you can have a state that does it, right?
Yeah.
You can have a government. That what's the purpose of government? The purpose of
three?
Government is to protect the citizens.
From
right?
themselves,
right?
Yes.
And then option three, I think... I want to throw out is you have to develop within the context of Christian vocation, whether that's marriage, obedience, you know, to the bishop and the priesthood, or obedience in religious life. It's a different type of obedience.
I would say, yes, I think you're right on the third one. I would maybe rephrase it just a little bit differently. And I would say, and it's found in St. John Paul II's encyclical on the redemption of man, the authentic way to become the best version of yourself, the authentic way to develop and grow in holiness and virtue, is Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ reveals to us what it means to be authentically a child of God, authentically human.
Right, but then the question
he shows us what obedience is.
I was going to say, but
it's the crucifix.
It's the crucifix. But can you do that? Can you do that by yourself? Can you do
not
that
by yourself?
No, my God.
Exactly.
No.
You need to do that within the context of some sort of vocation. So we're going to come back here in a few minutes, and we will talk a little bit more about obedience within vocation.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor, tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Alexa, what's the weather forecast for today?
Alexa, what time is the Colts game today?
Alexa, remind me to pick up the dry cleaning tomorrow.
Has Alexa become a part of your daily routine? Then make sure that routine includes Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Quick, easy access to Catholic programming 24/7. Just say, Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle, here with Timothy O'Donnell, Joseph Tomasian. And, you know, before the break, we were talking about that need for vocation to be able to honestly control yourself, right? I mean, you know, you need some sort of context within which you are learning obedience so that your destructiveness of a human being doesn't come out. I think of that Disney movie Lilo and Stitch, right? You know, you've got this...
I don't know that I've seen that one.
You've got this alien...
I love the name Stitch, though.
Yeah, but you know, the whole context is that there's this alien, and the alien's a destructive little monster, but he's cute, right?
Okay.
So, but
like a two-year-old.
But he has to learn. He has to learn that, you know, basically... He fits within the context of, in that case, fits within the context of an adopted family, but he has to learn to control himself, and he can't control himself when he's outside the context of the structure with which he was meant to live within. So, you know, the question though is that's not an obvious fact. If you went and talked to the average person, you know, and you said, okay, you know, outside of a family, outside of a religious community, or outside of serving the community as a whole, will you become a complete destructive force of nature? Most people would say, obviously not. No, you can.
And I would say, obviously yes.
I would say so too. So is that a uniquely Christian perspective on things?
Well, I think anytime we try to divorce the idea of an extrinsic reality versus an intrinsic, well, the idea that obedience and docility and vocation are these extrinsic realities is a violation of the most fundamental thing to our American mindset, and that is personal freedom. And so we think personal freedom means I'm free to do what I want. Mm-hmm. When I think we need to parse that out a bit and say freedom is freedom from the destructive tendencies of self. If I live in a community, if I live in my vocation, if I live in a family setting, in a culture, there are expectations of behavior. Okay, and in doing so, the expectations of behavior are going to prevent me from murder. It's going to prevent me from self-harm. It's going to prevent me from stealing and adultering. And
vice.
Vice, yes. Vice in general, vice right. overall. And it's going to encourage virtue. Now, virtue as in, you know, the classical sense of virtue, not this new woke virtue posturing.
Signaling.
Yeah, signaling, yes. Right. And in doing so, living the virtues, being self-disciplined under the obedience of something extrinsic, I think is something that very few people do today willingly.
No, and very few people, I think, would agree with all of that, because the bottom line of what you're saying is, to be moral, you have to be willing to obey.
Yeah, right? You have and to most, submit your will.
And most people submit your will. Most people would say, mm-hmm. no, you can be a moral, good human being outside the context of having to obey something.
I think partially, and it ultimately dissolves. Bishop Barron makes this point on a YouTube video that ultimately the grounding you can have overlap where someone who is, say, atheistic, at least practically speaking, can have overlap. They can refrain from stealing, let's say, and that overlaps or coincides with the commandment not to steal. But ultimately, what his point is, and I agree with it, is over time, though, you're susceptible because you don't have that. The foundation is intrinsic, not extrinsic. Mm-hmm. That ultimately you're going to drift. Your foundation will crumble.
Isn't obedience, though, naturally extrinsic? So if morality is intrinsic, then obedience is extrinsic.
No, I would say they're both extrinsic because left to my own devices, I'm going to violate natural law. That is one of the Ten Commandments. Left to my own devices, I'm going to violate one of the Ten Commandments, maybe all of them, maybe in the same day. That's why it's the law that was given to us. It was placed upon us. It was presented to us. This is how I want you to live in natural law. We could probably get there. We recognize it's bad, and yet we do it anyway.
That's St. Paul.
That's right.
but St. Paul also says, you know, yeah, that this idea of an extrinsic law to control everybody was tried. And that covenant was broken, right? We wouldn't know what breaking the covenant was if we didn't have the laws.
We
need that intrinsic obedience that's rooted in something else other than just slavish obedience
to
a law.
Do you mean grace?
Well, I mean a relationship.
Because that's also given to us.
I mean a relationship. That obedience only comes in relationship. And that's where I think Christian obedience does start to deviate from the extrinsic obedience to duty. I will defend my man Kant. I think he would be on my side in this. But but you know, I think that duty comes from a recognition of the relationship we have with others. And
I think it begins with Jesus Christ. I think it begins with that relationship.
But that's not your first relationship, Tim. It really isn't. Your first relationship is with your parents.
Yeah.
Well, I agree with that. That's the domestic church, it's family life. But at a very young age, right, beginning in usually kindergarten, you begin to introduce what? Formal religious ed, parochial schools. By second grade, it's sacraments. It's pretty early on, and of course we baptize babies.
Right.
We baptize infants to what? That's reborn.
Yeah,
right?
And that's a sociological reality that we live within is, I think, that recognition of your relationship with God comes through the vocation that you're born into, which is family life, right? And fewer people are born into family life, true family life that's built around that relationship, that covenantal relationship of marriage.
That's Mary Eberstadt.
Exactly.
That's her book. Multiple books, but the one definitively is How the West Lost Religion.
Right.
Is when you break down the family, that is because, to your point, that is how the reality of religion is passed on, how that love is first introduced into our lives, how the Trinity is mirrored in one's parents, And when you shattered the family or damaged the family, then that is a block, that is an impediment, and thus the big, probably the single largest, I would say, cause for the loss of faith.
Yeah. Her research in that book is incredible. She goes back and shows that when you look at these countries that have secularized, the pattern has not been secularization and then family breakdown. It's been the opposite. You've got family breakdown, and because of the family breakdown, then you have secularization that follows.
And look at what that secularized society brings with it. Abortion, among all sorts of other ills.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it may be unrelated too. The secularization leading to evil, that may be a chicken and an egg type of question. But the bigger point there is, as far as religious practice, and let's face it, religious practice across the West is declining. And a lot of that is because the family structures have been declining. You know, we talk about a vocations crisis. That vocations crisis for the priesthood, that vocations crisis for religious life, is rooted in a vocations crisis for marriage.
Well,
I don't agree that there is a religious life or a vocations crisis. I think there's a bunch less here in the United States and in Europe.
Well, that's true. Crisis is probably, you're right. It may not be a crisis, but it is certainly a decreasing number of people finding vocations to the priesthood as there were, let's say, three generations ago.
In the United States.
In the United States and in the West. I mean, in Western Europe as well. So,
Africa and China might be the two.
Yeah, India.
Asia, South America, Africa.
You're right. Yeah. I mean, that's a very Eurocentric way of looking
South
at it.
I think South America is
going. Yeah, that's your white privilege. Mark.
Right. But I would also say I don't think there's a marriage crisis in those cultures either.
No, there's not.
No. And so the idea of we need to restore marriage and we need to restore what the meaning of marriage is to start to evangelize our culture again is crucial. And you know what? That is a tough, we've been talking about obedience within the context of marriage. We've been talking about obedience as submission, that scripture of wives, submit yourself to your husbands. And I know it's followed up with, husbands, crucify yourselves for the sake of your wives.
That part's always left out.
It is always left out. Yeah. but nonetheless, that type of submission is so countercultural right now. Whole culture is built around self-actualization.
It stems from this notion that there's any sort of extrinsic force or institution or belonging outside of the individual
that makes a claim on you. Yeah. You're right. Right. That's the rejection.
And so there's
nothing outside myself that can lay a claim on me.
I create who I am, and when you tell me
that's the gnosis, and the real me is in here.
And when you tell me that
it.
I can't be that, I become victim.
Right.
Correct.
And in my victimization, I become the upper class.
You're harming me. Yeah,
and you know what?
You don't agree
I think
me.
You guys had the operative word there of claim, right? Mm-hmm. Obedience, there's kind of two sides to the coin. On the one hand, you have to be docile. You have to listen. Mm-hmm. You have to learn. But the opposite side of that is that claim that comes from the teacher.
Yeah.
That when you're obedient to somebody, it's because they've chosen you. They've claimed you. Mm-hmm. They've called you to be their own. And, our obedience in Christ is really built around that relationship of we're obedient to Christ because he claimed us.
That's right. For his own. I also think... Throughout sacred scripture, I know we're almost out of time, but I'll point out really quickly, if you look at like Psalm 119 and lots of other psalms, if you look at the letters of St. John, you see what? You see that God is the light.
Yeah.
He's the light, and not to be with God is to be in darkness. That's why secular morality fails. It ultimately fails because it ultimately resides in darkness.
Right. And it's also why it leads to this lack of understanding. I think the secular
God
culture
is wisdom.
No, no, no. The lack of understanding of marriage. That's where I was going with that. Lack of understanding of what marriage.
I'm going to run the clock out on you, Mark.
Go for it. Go for it.
No, we only got a minute left. So how do we want to wrap things up?
I think ultimately we can say things like by being claimed to be part of God's family, we submit our wills. We recognize that there's extrinsic virtue and value outside of what we have the capacity for, and so we listen and we make ourselves teachable. We make ourselves docile. We make ourselves obedient, and in doing so with Christ, we do so with the world.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.